I'm a crasher at everyone's party every night, you know? Sooner or later, they gotta like me. And if I stay too long and I'm not pleasant, they're gonna uninvite me.
Dimitri Kaladimos is something of a Nashville institution. A former television journalist for Channel 4, she was the longest continuously serving news personality in the station's history, anchoring the news desk after arriving in Music City in 1984. But 30-plus years into her career, Demetria was unprepared to have her decades of dedicated news coverage cut short.
I had a very sudden career change that was not of my doing. I'm going through box after box after box, which my husband thinks is not healthy after some point. But, you know, you can't help but look back when you're trying to move forward.
And for Demetria, part of that process of figuring out how to move forward has meant thinking a lot about those who've passed.
I used to tell my mother that I was terrified that I would forget the sound of my father's voice. When he passed, his voice was still on the answering machine. She erased it, and I was furious.
The second box sounds just like my father, and here I was, terrified, forgetting his voice, an orphan. But words are space. Surprising. Unpacking, tossing, saving. My desk is empty. Things in more boxes. 34 years in boxes, and I am talking to my city again. Are you sick yet of my voice?
That's poet Lagnajita Mukhopadhyay. Today, she hears from Demetria about her enduring commitment to the power of journalistic storytelling, how she coped with closing the book on over three decades as a Channel 4 news reporter, and how revisiting family narratives is helping Demetria to write her next chapter. Then Lagnajita takes the weave of Demetria's personal and professional histories and turns them into poetry. From Nashville Public Radio, PRX, and the Porch Writers Collective, I'm Joshua Moore. This is Versify.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you'd like to support this work, you can make a donation at WPLN.org.
Perhaps it's cliché to reference Shakespeare's line, "A rose by any other name would smell as sweet," when musing on the importance of a distinctive moniker. But in the case of longtime news anchor Demetria Kaladimos, her success as a television journalist has been perhaps as well defined by her track record of crack reporting as by her polysyllabic surname. And at the start of their conversation, Demetria and poet Lagnajita Mukhopadhyay quickly realized that the unique experience of living with a distinctive last name is something that the two of them share in common.
My name is Lagnajita Mukhopadhyay, Lagnajita Mukhopadhyay.
You win. I thought I had the worst name. I'm Demetria Kaladimos, Demetria Kaladimos. It's rare for me still to see what 6 o'clock p.m. looks like outside of a box or a television set. But I've, for the past 34 years, was a regular TV journalist, nightly anchor here in Nashville until very recently.
That's awesome because, in fact, me and my mother would watch Channel 4 every night. Actually, I moved here when I was 6 from India. Yeah. And, like, we'd be in our little, like, one-bedroom, two-bedroom, and, like, we'd watch the nightly news, and we'd always see you. So when I got, "You're going to interview Demetria," I was like, "That's my whole childhood."
Oh,
like,
wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that.
That feeling of nostalgia that Lagnajita had at just hearing Demetria's name is pretty common. A staple of the weekly newscast, back when there were only about 4 stations where you could get the news, Demetria was a fixture in many Middle Tennessee households, including mine. After years of seeing her in our living rooms week after week, for many of us, Demetria almost started to feel like family. And Demetria credits that broad acceptance, at least in part, to her memorable last name.
It was so different for the time, and when my grandfather came over, the practice or the tradition was, okay, that's a complicated name. We're going to give you an easy, Americanized one and change it right there. And he said, no way. Because Kaladimos means something. Kalo means good. And Demos means like democracy, people. Good person, good people. Why would you change that name?
Though, when Demetria first started out in her career back in Champaign, Illinois, the Kalodimos name wasn't quite so well received. And in fact, Demetria was pressured to report under a pseudonym. Never mind the fact that her co-anchor's last name was Jakubowski, or that the sports anchor's was Shinowski. Kalodimos, they felt, was just a little too ethnic. She was rechristened Demetria K in Champaign. But when she had the chance to continue her career in Nashville, Demetria made sure that nobody altered Kalodimos by so much as a syllable.
People were mispronouncing it and misspelling it and making fun of it, but it turned out to be the greatest asset I ever had.
Long before Demetria got into journalism, back when she was growing up in Chicagoland, the Kalodimos name became associated with the 24-hour news cycle in a less than positive light.
A very young cousin I had, he died at 20 in a very bad circumstance. He was committing a crime and was killed in a shootout. And I was about 11. The story made the news in Chicago. And when your name is Kalodimos, you know, immediately the questions, hey, I'm sorry about your brother. Well, it's not my brother, but it is a relation. And I had to deal with that. And I think looking back many years later, that gave me a bit of sensitivity to people who unexpectedly, again, out of the blue, end up in the news for whatever reason, and how that wave ripples out. Because there are other relations having to deal with hearing their name broadcast or seeing it in print. And there's something very permanent about that.
Beyond her cousin Gus, another family member that inadvertently played a role in shaping Demetria's journalistic ethos was her grandmother, Yaya.
She was from Greece, came over through Ellis Island, and she marries George Kalodimos. And she has a wonderful life initially because he's doing very well. And then my grandfather passes away very suddenly, young. And my grandmother has to go to work. And she ends up working at the flagship store in Chicago, Marshall Fields on State Street. And she's in alterations. You know, she was a seamstress who did alterations, but she could also sew anything from scratch. And when we were young, she would moonlight at a furrier. She'd sew fur coats. So as a young girl, I had mink collar, mink muff, mink beret, ermine. I mean, she would take the scraps and like design these outrageous, beautiful clothes for us. But you know how it is when all the other kids have store-bought and yours are exquisite, but you don't think they're good enough because they're not store-bought? When in actuality, when you look later, was I crazy? This was absolutely beautiful. And the funny joke was, you know, she'd always end up sewing a pin somewhere right in the waistband, and you'd be in school, you know, taking a test, and one sudden moving, you'd be jabbed by a pin. And that was always funny. But once I got to, it was the, I'll give my age away, it was the late 60s, early 70s, and everyone was wearing the most frayed out blue jean cutoffs you could get. I mean, that was, you wanted them to look as ratty as possible. The thing was putting this embroidered trim. It was like everyone was doing it. So I asked Yaya, I said, you know, these are my favorite cutoffs. Can you sew this embroidered trim on there? And I was excited to get them back because we were going to like a pool party and that sort of thing outdoors. And here she presented to me a beautiful Marshall Fields box with the tissue paper and the little, you know, she always wrapped everything beautifully. That's what they do in Greece still. If you get like bakery goods, it's all wrapped with a bow. And she presented to me my cutoffs back. And she had cleaned them up. She had cut off all the fringe. She had every hole or rip in it. She had beautifully sewed back. I mean, they were perfect. And I was furious, being a girl of 13 or whatever, and really not even thinking. I lit into her. I mean, I was like, how could you and why did you? And she was so confused because she thought she had done something wonderful. And I mean, here I am, 40 plus, almost 50 years later. And I still think it's the most guilty moment of my young life to have criticized her for doing what she thought was the best thing in the world for me. So that was another life lesson, you know? You had to learn it the hard way. It's the classic age-old, you don't know until you know, and then you know better, thanks to the previous generation.
Demetria's appreciation for this type of family legacy is something she shares in common with the rest of the Kalodimos clan. Much of her family still lives close together in the Chicagoland area. And while those relationships are intimately important to Demetria, as she was finishing college in the early 80s, she also became passionately invested in telling people's stories through news reporting. And that passion spurred her to leave her home state of Illinois and put down roots in Nashville as a journalist. A decision that was uncommon for people in her family.
So have you always been interested in, I know you were talking about how the shocking events that you went through built you up to be more sympathetic and understanding of other people's news. Have you always been interested in the news in this way?
Yes. I was the annoying child that would read the newspaper aloud to my family.
All right.
I was the annoying child who loved term papers and loved presenting to the class. Everyone else dreaded the speech or the presentation.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I couldn't wait. I went through an entire undergraduate degree in a completely different field. I was a music major. When I decided that I was going to go right into graduate school and pursue something else, I thought to myself, well, this is what always I felt had come naturally to me and gave me joy and kept me interested. And I always wanted to be the first to know. I was kind of nosy. So I thought all those qualities would work.
And what did your parents think about?
Oh, can you imagine? My parents were thrilled, you know. They were proud of all of us. I mean, my other siblings are very successful in their own right. But my parents used to love to come down and turn on the TV and watch me, you know.
Good evening and welcome to Channel 4 News at 10. With just a few hours to go until taxes are due, this year may trigger more panic than ever before.
In a few years, your turntable may be gathering dust in the corner next to that old stack of albums. Instead, you'll listen to the latest hits on a compact disc player. Last of the Past will take a look at what came before computers. And we'll take a look back and say thanks for the memories to a departing Dan Miller.
And the funny thing would happen when we'd go back, when I'd go back and we'd be sitting as a family watching. If they started criticizing someone's hair or what they were wearing or whatever, I would get so upset. I would say, how would you feel if someone was sitting at their dinner table doing that to me, which they probably are at this moment? So it was funny because my parents sort of, they cleaned up their act. Not that they were that critical, but they never criticized anyone on television for making an error or anything like that. They had a new understanding of what it was like.
Right. And how did you handle that visibility in a way? Because I know when I was watching with my mom also had short hair and like,
yeah.
She was like very different from like all the Indian community, and like she came all the way across the world. She's a scientist, you know, so she just went against like that whole grain, and like she even related to like you had short hair, and I was always like, there's someone that looks like my mom, you know, and it was like really exciting.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because you know, short hair was sort of a daring move. In the old days, NBC would do these promos where you would sit next to Tom Brokaw and you'd say, I'm Tom Brokaw, and you say, I'm Demetria Kalodimos, watch Channel 4. And it was this cool weekend, like, you know, you got flown up there, and I remember it was an assembly line of people, and I looked around the room and I thought, everyone looks the same. I mean, the only thing I had different at that point was brown hair and brown eyes. And I thought, I'm going right back to short hair. The minute I landed back in Nashville, I cut my hair back short. And then the station was furious, because here they had this Tom Brokaw promo with me, and I didn't look like me anymore. And they couldn't run it, you know? So I kind of trashed the promo. But at that point, I never looked back.
But being a local news anchor meant coming under scrutiny for more than just her hairstyle. Over time, Demetria's personal life was made a matter of public interest. and in the late 90s, she experienced an especially difficult personal matter that was highly publicized.
10 to 13 years after I moved to Nashville, I went through a bad divorce. And my mother told a great story. She said she heard a little rustling around like in the early hours, and she thought nothing of it and kind of just rolled and went back to bed again. And she woke up and my dad was nowhere to be found. And his little, no note or anything, which is typical. And this was before cell phones, you know. And he had packed his little bag, got in his car, drove to Nashville, and he stayed for the next 3 months with me to kind of literally get me through. And what a gift. I used to joke that I saw more of my dad's feet hanging out from under a car than I did his face, because I'd just kick him as I was going to school or whatever on a Saturday. And so many girls spend a certain amount of time, you know, your daddy's daughter, and you know, you go to those little events and stuff. And we were three girls and one boy, so there were a lot of daddy's daughters in our family. But my sisters never had that experience to, as an adult, spend that much time with him. And it's one way that I've reconciled another hard thing, that I was the only child that wasn't there when both of my parents passed.
10 years after he came to stay with her, Demetria's father was diagnosed with late-stage lung cancer. In the intervening years, Demetria met and fell in love with musician Verlin Thompson. But on the day of their wedding, her father was unable to attend due to ailing health. He passed away 2 weeks later.
I used to tell my mother that I was terrified that I would forget the sound of my father's voice. When he passed, his voice was still on the answering machine. And I loved it, and my mother really had a hard time hearing it. She just, it didn't register the same way, and she erased it, and I was furious. And I said, great, now I'll never remember what Dad's voice is. And she said, you will never forget. And she was so right. I was terrified that after erasing that, you know, you've reached the Calidemuses, that I'd never hear his voice again. I can close my eyes and ears right now and hear it. Exactly.
In the wake of her father's death, Demetria relied on her family and her close network of colleagues and friends to help her through. Chief among them was her fellow co-anchor, Dan Miller, who Demetria describes by turns as a mentor, a confidant, and an older brother figure. And Dan certainly treated her accordingly.
Dan Miller had one outtake of me that was almost Marge Simpson. Seriously, it was almost that high. And he used to love to pull that tape out and freeze it and say, what were you thinking? But we had a great relationship that way. Mm-hmm.
Demetria and Dan were close both on and off the air. In addition to his reporting for WSMV, Dan moonlighted as an amateur blogger. On his website, Dan Miller's Notebook, he cataloged often less sensational but equally engaging news stories in a writing style that calls to mind the endearing pith of an Andy Rooney closing segment. And among the musings on music icons, Tales of Pet Adoption and Confessions of Possum Side were pieces about friends and family, several of which included Demetria. In one entry entitled October Love Story, Dan chronicled Demetria and Verlin's wedding ceremony and dedicated the close of the post to her father's passing. The following week, he copied several of the responses, mostly well wishes for Demetria and Verlin, as well as offers of condolence, and uploaded them as their own post for Demetria to see. In a picture from the wedding, you can see Dan beaming in the background as Verlin and Demetria lean in for their newlywed kiss. Over the years, Dan and Demetria's work relationship had grown into a thriving and essential friendship, which is why she was especially hard hit when he passed unexpectedly the following year. And unfortunately, that wasn't the end of Demetria's loss.
This is the day 8 years ago that my mother passed away. And when I set it on the calendar to have this conversation, I thought to myself, there's really no way I cannot talk about my mother. And I look just like her, which is wonderful, but it's also sometimes frightening. I used to laugh because when we test the cameras in the studio, I'd say, how did my mother get here? You know, because I'd look at myself and I'd really see her. And she died very suddenly after what was a successful heart surgery. She was having a valve replacement, and the doctors were like, you're so great, we're going to let you go home early. And my brother drove her home. He said she didn't feel well in the car, and he had a thought like, we should go back. And he did, and he said, oh, it's probably just the medicine and the excitement. And within an hour, she had passed away on the bedroom floor in my brother's arms. And I had already returned to Nashville thinking, everything's A-okay. And I got the phone call on the news set in the middle of the broadcast. It's hard to describe how unexpected, shocking death like that affects you. I had been through two prior. My father had passed away in 2008. My longtime news partner, Dan Miller, had passed away very suddenly again, middle of the night phone call in 2009. And here was my mother passing away in 2010. And changed my life. I mean, of course it changed my life. Because I already felt like half an orphan when my dad passed, and we were a little more prepared because he had an illness. But I thought my mother would outlive me. And, you know, I miss her every minute. But the wonderful stuff comes when you laugh at something she would have absolutely laughed at. And more than once, I have woken up in the morning and thought, I gotta call Mom. And it's been 8 years, and I still have the thought and the need and the desire to call my mom. So I just talked to her. You know, maybe crazy, but I know a lot of other people that have lost dear ones, and you just talk. And I think I got that from my mother. When we were young, both of her parents were gone. She would take us to the particular cemetery where that side of the family was a really idyllic, not scary at all, beautiful, natural flowers, shaded trees, very small. And we would always go on holidays. My mother loved to garden, and she'd plant fresh flowers at the grandparents. And she would sit and talk to them for 20, 30 minutes. And that I thought that was completely normal growing up. So my siblings, I don't get to visit very often at home, but every time I go, the burning desire for me is to go straight to where my parents are and talk to them.
I was just wondering, through you telling all these stories about your family and the past and stuff, you seem to be going through a time of reflection, and steady reflection, and I was wondering what may have spurred that on and why you continue to think about the past in this way.
Well, I had a very sudden career change that mm-hmm. was not of my of my doing, and was sudden and kind of shocking, and still is. It's mm-hmm. been, you know, I guess 3 months. Mm-hmm. And you can't help but go back to the first time you were excited about getting that job, moving to town, all the things that went along with it. Again, I told you I'm going through box after box after box, which my husband thinks is not healthy after some point, but I'm a Virgo, I have to organize. And, you know, you can't help but look back when you're trying to move forward. I'm going through 34 years of boxes, and I am amazed at things I kept. And sometimes I look and say, why did I keep this? And other times it is so crystal clear, and it's a new treasure. I'm like, now I have to have this in my hand or in my wallet or in my purse. I cannot toss anything with either one of my parents' handwriting on it. As trivial as it is, my father, you know, how to check your oil. You know, which is a good thing to keep anyway. You got to know what to do. But something that mundane is like a work of art.
Right. So what's your next step?
I have no idea. I know I will tell stories in some way, most likely through video. I know I'll continue to be a journalist. And I certainly have loved, I still absolutely love the work. I'm going to continue to do the work until the day I'm gone, so.
Right. And what would you say, like, your, what would you say your favorite stories or the ones that inspire you the most when you do news now?
I love stories of survival. You know, people that go through it and get through the other side. One of the things I'm most proud of is I did a very lengthy and thorough documentary on the Marsha Trimble murder case. Through that, I got to meet two people that were tremendously hurt. Marsha's mother, who was suspected, had to grieve, had to wonder, and didn't get answers until way, way down the line. But to me, even the more interesting person was the falsely accused neighbor boy when we sat down and did the interviews and got to know one another. I think it was meant to be because we were exactly the same age at exactly the same time. I knew what it was like to be 15 in that year. I knew exactly what he was listening to, what he cared about, all these things, and I could sort of put myself in his shoes. And at the same time, Virginia reminded me so much of relatives and other people that I knew because she was so resilient. So people always find a way to bounce back, and that's really given me something to ponder and learn from too. Because people find a way.
When we come back, we'll hear more from Lognajita about the experience of speaking to a Nashville news icon and how she plans to take Demetria's tale of legacy, loss, and a love of journalism and turn it into poetry. This is Versify.
Hey, I'm Jacob Lewis. If you like Versify, you will love Neighbors. I'm on a quest to make sense of the human experience through the lives of the people in my community. There's something magical about getting an intimate pass into someone's world and hearing about moments that transformed them.
I was shot within seconds of exiting my car.
See, what people don't realize is that we all have things that we carry that can bring us together.
Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and get to know your neighbors.
We live in a culture where often it's rare for us to meet face-to-face with people we spend an inordinate amount of time with. Whether that's the television actor whose every sitcom line we've memorized, the podcaster who accompanies us on our morning commute, what's good, Michael Barbaro, or the newscaster who beams into our television set each evening. Occasionally, though, we're granted the rare opportunity to sit down with one of these stranger friends and gain a look into what their lives are actually like.
I would say my favorite part is just seeing like the person behind the screen. You know, that's something I don't think most people, you know, have the privilege, you know, to see or to understand. Even if there's like little encounters that she probably has in the world, like it was much different that it, like, it's flipped, like, and I'm asking the question and I'm listening to her story. We just kept coming back to the concept of memory. Obviously, that was the obvious thing, but when she was talking about the boxes, you know, packing and unpacking, that's very metaphorical. Like, she's, you know, looking at these physical objects, but, like, also examining, like, so much time and so much memory and so much has changed. And it was really interesting that she started off with the story about her mother. And I felt like that was such a personal moment we got to experience. And, yeah, I think that whole, like, unpacking metaphor just made me think in a different way.
Lognajita spoke to Demetria as part of the Porch Writing Center's annual fundraiser event. So a few weeks after they spoke, Lognajita delivered the poem live on stage, both to Demetria and a room full of fundraiser attendees.
Every time, doesn't get old. The epitaph reads, little boxes, little boxes, all the same. This is cleaning out the boxes from my old office.
The first box has my mother's face. And they all say I look like her, so maybe I am a box too. I ask myself, who have I been today? But I only think about my absence 8 years ago on the bedroom floor in my brother's arms. She would have outlived me. The faded picture of the shaded cemetery, idyllic, orthodox, fresh flowers, her in that box and me talking to her. My hair is still short, Mom. They can still see me all the way from Chicago. I'm older now, Mom. They think that I'm older now. The second box sounds just like my father, and here I was terrified of forgetting his voice, an orphan. But words are space, surprising, unpacking, tossing, saving. My desk is empty. Things in more boxes. I keep everything with handwriting. My father's how to change oil, a mundane work of art, the still little past. Far away, Dad, stumbling and laughing, proud. I'm different now. The third box knows of my shame. My grandmother's finger sewing me up, ruining my frayed blue jean cutoffs that she made too clean, and I screamed I wanted to be like everyone else then, young, and she just wanted the best. Pin not in waistband, in Flagstaff, unwrapped boxes, yeah, I take it all back now. The ripped blue jeans are still in style. Full circle nostalgia, like we do not know until we know, and then we know better, and I'm older now. And the last box says working for you. Looking backwards, trying, moving on, but you know me. I want to be the first to know. The survival stories, illuminating sidelines, so permanent, their first time on TV, monumental bounce back, sensitive to shock, catharsis, and a soundbite. Hey, are you sick of my voice yet? 34 years in boxes, and I am talking to my city again. Are you sick yet of my voice? Am I still an old box too? Or am I memory? Am I memento? Am I different now? Thank you.
Versify is a production of Nashville Public Radio and The Porch, which trains our poets and hosts our storytelling events. If you like this episode, let us know about it. Subscribe to the show and rate it in Apple iTunes. Editing for this episode came from WPLN's Matt Kleinbaugh, with additional editing from Anita Bug. The episode was written and produced by me, Joshua Moore. Carl Peterson masters the show. The audio from the conversation was recorded by Tasha Lemley at WPLN for the Porch Writers Collective's 2018 fundraiser. The music was by Blue Dot Sessions. Versify is distributed by PRX. And tune in again to hear the beauty of how we can turn your life into poetry, one verse at a time.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.